It's hard to know where to begin introducing Lucy Neal. Lucy Neal comes to us by Mr. Glenn Rivera, who's our Executive Director of Talent and Music Bookings. Glenn sends us some incredible people to talk to, and indeed, here's an incredible person with us tonight. Her name is Lucy Neal. Lucy was born in Cleveland, Ohio, and she is a talented singer and a songwriter and a vocalist for a long list of artists. Since the early 70s, she's done that. In 74, Lucy was one of the vocalists on the first Silver Convention album. The album was called Save Me, and you'll remember, all of us will remember, the track called Fly, Robin, Fly. What is it with that song? That was such a huge hit. That was back in the early 70s. She's also recorded a single that was released in Germany under the name Lucy O'Day, and she formed a group, Family Tree. She left Family Tree and formed a rock jazz band in Munich with another Family Tree member, Mel Kennedy, which was called Ruby and the Mudflaps. Now, Lucy is currently a real estate agent and a very good one and successful one at that. She lives in San Diego. I think Lucy Neal should get the award hands down for possibly the best domain name in the entire planet. Lucy's real estate site is lucyimhome.com. That's right. She sells houses. Her address is lucyimhome.com. That gets an A+. Boy, I wish I could think of a lot of a domain name like that. I'm surprised it was available. Wonderful. Even though she grew up in Cleveland, she went to a high school in Shaker Heights. She's been a recording artist, a singer, composer, a lyricist, a backup studio vocalist, a television performer, a cast member of the Swiss Theater Company, and they toured Europe doing the musical Hair. She's been a cruise ship entertainer, a folk singer, a waitress, and a caterer, and is, of course, now over at lucyimhome.com. She graduated high school in Shaker Heights in Ohio. She went on to Connecticut College. She has a BA in English Literature. She went on to Harvard to study Psychology of Religion, a woman after my own heart. She's at Wesleyan. She's studied electronic music and North American Indian vocal music. She studied the import and export business, and she's taken courses in creative writing. Wow. She's also an animal lover and shares her life with cats and dogs and turtles and fish and even a python. She volunteers over at Best Friends Animal Sanctuary and the San Diego Humane Society. We'll have to find out more about those when she comes in the show, which would be just a moment. She's also an associate at Scripps Institution of Oceanography and a contributing member of the Nature Conservancy and the Ocean Conservancy and the Marine Mammal Center at the Gorilla Foundation and the Elephant Sanctuary. And she's traveled the world, visited 50 countries, and 13 of those years that were lived outside of the United States were spent in Germany. She's a collector of Dutch art and a gourmet cook. And you don't want to mess with a woman who grows and cures her own olives. This is a fact. Lucy Neal, welcome to Strictly Confidential.
Hey, Peter. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm delighted to have you on the show.
Nice to be here.
It is good to have you. I need to ask right off the bat, Lucy, can you hear me okay?
I can hear you fine.
Fine. If that changes at all during the show, you just speak up and let us know, and the studio can make some adjustments. You know,
okay. We
here on the network have started referring to Glenn Rivera as a disco magnet because we never know who he's going to find next. How did you and Glenn meet?
Well, he found me, and I think he found me, I'll have to ask him, I think he found me over the internet through a couple of other fans, and I had a little bit of a site on the internet that someone else had created that I think that's where he located me, and he also was in touch with a fan that I have in Holland who's been very helpful in contributing materials to that site. That site is down right now, but Glenn's going to put one back up. So,
interesting.
I think they all connected, and then he found me, and we played telephone for a couple of days or weeks even, And
I wonder if Glenn knew that you were in San Diego at the time. That's his neck of the woods.
Yeah, I think he found that out, yeah. Well, you read the whole list, didn't you, from my website down to the
Well, I did because it was remarkable. Quite frankly, there were so many things that you've done and such a wide range, it lended itself well to just going through the list. Lucy, what was it like growing up in Cleveland? What was the family? What was your family like growing up as a kid?
I grew up with my mom and my real sister, but when I was 8, my mom remarried, and I inherited 2 teenage siblings, a brother and a sister. I was the youngest of 4 in that combined family, and my mom really influenced me a lot in my love of animals and nature and appreciation of art, and she was an artist, and she would take me out in the woods and turn over rocks and show me salamanders and snakes, and I get most of all of that from my mom. And then, of course, it was a snowy climate, so we went, sledding in the wintertime, and summertime I spent up in Michigan at camp and teaching canoeing and things like that. It was just a really, really fun growing up.
Well, Lucy, would you say that you got some of your music talent from your mom, too? She seems to have been a great influence for you.
Actually, my musical talent probably comes from my real father. He was in a family of 6 children, and they had a family orchestra. Each one of them played an instrument, and my father had perfect pitch, and he used to listen to the... I remember when I was, 5 and 6, he used to listen and record the opera in New York on Sunday afternoons or Saturday afternoons, and he had a trumpet, and when I was 5 years old, I asked for an electric guitar, and they gave me a plastic ukulele.
Yeah, I think every family had one of those things banging around.
But eventually I got a bigger ukulele, a wooden ukulele, then I got a baritone ukulele, and I also got a banjo that was abandoned by my brother because he didn't want to play it, and I got a mandolin and took piano lessons and just went on from there.
I see. You mentioned your father had perfect pitch. Are you also a perfect pitch kind of woman?
I can't claim to have perfect pitch. Not at all.
Nonetheless, you have an innate talent for it because I don't see any music in your educational background, so all this must come from the heart and be a gift.
Yeah. And I've always loved to harmonize. I mean, even when I was 14, I put together a group of 5 girls, my junior high school buddies, and we entered the junior high school talent show with a song called Well, 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 and we won the talent show, and then they asked us to do some gigs, and we only knew one song. So we were some Wellers, and we put together a repertoire back then, Sloop John B. and Scott Soda, and mostly, folk music, and we all played guitars, and we started doing some gigs, and we even had a television show. That was when I was 14. So it's always been in my life, and then at summer camp, I would play the guitar and entertain the campers on rainy days in the lodge and things like that. It's just always been a part of my life.
Wow! Tell us about the television show. How did that work out from Well, Well, Well to a television camera?
Well, it was just a local TV show, Cleveland local TV, and I don't know how they heard about us, but they did, and they asked us on, and we sang a song or two, and I have a funny picture of people standing in high heels and bouffant hairdos and these enormous cameras, and we're sitting there in our little, Madras blouses that our mothers made and matching, skirts, pleated skirts, and playing our guitars. And I remember being so disillusioned because after we did that cut of a song, the announcer said, would you like to do another song? This was after the cameras were off, and we said, sure, no problem. And so he said, okay, we'll have you do another song. And he stood in front of us, cameras went on, and he said, thank you for all your cards and letters. We had such a tremendous response to these young ladies. We're going to have them on again this week. And there we were in the same little outfits, and we sang another song.
Oh,
and
no.
I was thinking, He lied.
Oh, yes. Yeah, that's the television for you. And
yeah.
You must have had some wonderful times. And I'm wondering about when you were coming up through school, especially high school, were you active in the theater? I noticed one of the things you've done is you performed in the European Tour of Hair.
Yes. No, I wasn't doing theater in high school. I did one show, at just kind of a funny variety type of show that we put together in college. But no, I wasn't in theater, and but I was invited to do the musical production of Hair in Germany and German-speaking Europe. And that goes back to my days in Morocco, where I met some guys who had been with the cast of Hair, and we started singing together in Morocco, and they subsequently invited me to join the cast. That's kind of a long story. I don't know how much of it you'd want to hear.
Well, we would like to know all of the details. We'll get them out of you one way or the other. Now, Germany, you spoke German, but you've lived in Munich and Germany and Vienna and Austria and the island of Crete. How did you come to travel so far? This is really just something else. From a young woman from Cleveland, how did this come about?
Well, when I was in college, graduated from Connecticut College, and one of my classmates there, we decided, this was in 1966, and, you know, right after Kent State and Vietnam War, and we said, we don't want to fold back into this establishment. So we decided we would travel when we could while we were still single and jobless, and so, okay, we're going to Europe. And so in this summer, after I graduated, I went out with another friend, a different friend, to Carmel, California, and worked as a cocktail waitress to earn some money for the trip to Europe, and got to be the end of August or beginning of September, and I called up my friend from college, and she was driving taxi in New Jersey for the summer to earn money, and I said, Linda, you ready to go? And she said, no way, I don't have enough money saved, and so I didn't know what to do, and I called my mom in Cleveland, and I said, Mom, Linda's not ready to go to Europe. I don't know what to do. And she said, well, what's stopping you from going by yourself, dear?
Your mother, wow, what a character.
Yeah, my jaw dropped, but I didn't want to let on that I was would be too timid. So I said, yeah, right, Mom. And so about a week later, I was on a plane from New York to Luxembourg and London, and I went in a backpack and a guitar and an open-ended ticket, and I started in London, and I just was by myself, and I met people here and there, and I traveled down through the communist bloc, places I hadn't been before because I'd been to Europe as a teenager with my grandmother, and so I went down through Eastern Europe and Czechoslovakia and Yugoslavia and Bulgaria and down into Greece, and then in Greece, I went down to the island of Crete and got an apartment there with a couple of people that I was traveling with. And then I moved on and went to North Africa, hitched across North Africa, and stayed in Morocco for 7 months. And being a hippie, and that's where I met these two guys who had been with the cast of Hair. One was a black guy from San Francisco, and the other one was a German guy. And they were in Morocco, and I met them on the beach, and somebody said, oh, there's two guys from Hair down on the beach. You ought to come see them. So I went down there, and they were in this little cafe kiosk type of thing, and the guy from San Francisco had this auto harp, and I said, oh, wow. I said, I haven't seen an auto harp since I was, you know, in elementary school at church. And so he said, well, you're welcome to play it, and I picked it up, and I took it out of the little cafe, and I sat down on the beach, and I started strumming this auto harp, and I was singing. It Stoned Me from Van Morrison. And he brought his friend out. He said, you got to hear her voice. She's got a really low voice. It's really interesting. And so they said, why don't you get together, move in with us, and we can put a group together, and we'll sing here in clubs in Morocco. And I said, well, I can't because I'm headed south. I'm planning to go to Timbuktu, no joke aside, and I was going to go over to Brazil. But I went out with them that evening, and then the next day I headed south, and I didn't get where I was going. I was stopped at the Spanish Sahara border, came back, moved in with them in Agadir, and we put a little group together, and we were singing in clubs. This story is way, way too long, but...
No, we have plenty of time.
Oh, well, anyway, we sang in some clubs, and then we went up to Casablanca, and we sang in a couple of more clubs, and then at Casablanca, I got a letter from my parents saying they were moving to La Jolla, and that I needed to come home and clean out my room. By this time, I had been gone for a year, and so I made my way slowly back to California to clean out my room, and I hadn't gone through the $900 that I had taken with me in a whole year, and got home, cleaned out my room, drove a car, one of their cars, to La Jolla, and when I was in La Jolla, I got a telegram saying, we've rejoined the cast of Hair, the Swiss touring production, and we've played a tape of your voice for the director, and if you want a job, be in Dusseldorf on the 11th of March. So I picked up and went to Dusseldorf.
And but you had to do this in German. How did you pick up German?
I didn't speak a word of it when I went. I learned the show phonetically. And I spoke French at the time, and I learned it in school, and I was speaking French quite well in Morocco. I do have an affinity for languages. And so I learned the show phonetically, and it was months into it before I had any clue what I was saying. Just singing it with a pretty decent pronunciation. And slowly I learned it, and then pretty soon you start learning how to speak German. I never took classes or anything, but the biggest challenge when you're speaking foreign language is for someone to hand you a telephone. You know, it's different when you're in person and you can gesture with your hands and everything's in context. But at one point, I just started to be able to speak on the phone, and my German, all of a sudden, my German was better than the English that my German friends were speaking. And then I stayed there for 13 years, so I just... I got pretty proficient at it.
13 years. And,
13 years.
This
and
was
part of that travel that you read, part of that, these 50 countries that I visited, was because with my last group in Germany, which was the Hornets, we worked twice a year on cruise ships as the Star Entertainment. So that's how I saw a lot of countries as well, on cruise ships.
Well, I have a note. By the way, I want to tell you, one of our chatters, when you were talking about performing in the same outfit, she lives in Ohio. Maybe this is it. She said to tell you that Dorothy Fuldheim wouldn't have been caught dead in the same outfit twice, and that you would know who she was talking to.
Yeah.
You'll have to tell us who Dorothy Fuldheim is. I don't have a clue.
Well, I just recognize her as a TV personality, but I can't tell you much more about her.
Is that was someone from the Ohio area, was it?
Yeah,
or
I
was
think she was local, yeah.
I see. I have a note here that when you were with the Hornets, that's for some reason that the Hornets were very popular with the multimillionaire old money crowd. Now, this is very interesting to me. How did that come to be?
Well, this was a group that I had, it was the last group before I came back to the States, and it was, I put it together with Gita Walter, who was one of the people I had been in a lot of groups with, and whose name appears on many disco albums, including Silver Convention and Donna Summer, and she and I did a lot of backup vocals together, and we had been in this group, Love Generation, together, and we decided to put a new group together of women singing songs of the 60s mostly, you know, like the Ronettes and that type of, lots of harmonies and Dulangs and stuff. And so we
yeah.
did that. And we got Christina Harrison and at the time Dagmar Helberg, but was quickly substituted with Linda Thompson, who was with Silver Convention. And we did a fantastic club show, and it was just a gas. And we did kind of a la Bette Midler with really tacky outfits and a little choreography. I remember we sang I Like Bread and Butter, and we actually had an assembly line making peanut butter sandwiches on stage and passing them out to the audience. And,
that's and perfect.
One song I did a la Bette Midler, I took a song that I thought was public domain. It turns out it wasn't, but it was it was a song in Polynesian from an Adventures in Paradise movie soundtrack. And I wrote, we sang a couple of couplets in original Polynesian, and the next two were in Hawaiian-sounding Bavarian. You know, like Bette Midler used to do with "Come On, I Wanna Lay Ya," that kind of
yes,
thing.
Yes, classic.
And I wore like a coconut shell bra on stage and played the ukulele, and the girls wore grass skirts. Anyway, we had a ball, and then that's when our producer Ralph Siegel found us and signed us up. But so we got playing gigs around, and pretty soon we had to move out of the club scene because it couldn't support the four girls and the five guys on stage, and so we moved into conventions and private parties, and some of these parties were catered by Gerhard Käfer, who's the biggest caterer in Germany, and he invited us to sing at some of his parties, where these parties were loaded with very wealthy people. The first party we did was not through Gerhard Käfer, it was through a friend of mine who was dating at the time, the woman who was, she was heiress to the guys in Ariel, who make wash powder.
My star.
Ariel?
Yes, vaguely, yeah.
Yeah, the washing powder fortune.
Uh-huh.
So
yeah.
At her party were a lot of extremely wealthy Europeans. Well, they just couldn't get enough of us. They thought it was hilarious, and so they kept inviting us to their parties. And
Among
the crowd was Stakios. He's the second biggest shipping magnet next to Onassis.
My
and,
stars.
And Gunter Sachs, who was an industrialist. He was married to Brigitte Bardot at one time, but he was extremely wealthy, and Mr. Rossi from Martini and Rossi. Helena Rochat was there at the party.
And, wow.
You know, Christina Onassis was there sitting on the floor in front of me.
Wow.
With her then-fiancé, the Russian guy. And, the Baroness from Guinness, the Guinness Brewery Baroness. Anyway, this was the crowd. And it was what I call old money, because they had been wealthy for so long, they really knew how to have a good time, and they were not uptight like the nouveau riche, and we just had a ball. And in many of those private parties, we took with us a band called Supercharge, which is a kind of a Blues Brother type of band from Liverpool, who was a great band in their own right. And anyway, we had a lot of fun, and we'd be flown to hunting lodges and Austria and little and castles in San Moritz, and Christina Onassis invited us to play at Maxime in Paris at her wedding, and we weren't able to because of scheduling conflicts. But it was really fun time.
Well, Lucy, didn't it at times you just sit back and shake your head and wonder that you know, leaving Cleveland with $900 that it turned into what it did turn into? You had to be stunned by it. I am.
Yeah, it's really something. It really was.
Well, it's an amazing adventure. Well, if you would tell us about your connection with the Silver Convention, and how did that begin?
Well, I was in the music scene in Munich, and there's a lot of recording going on in Munich, and lots of recording studios, and so I and Gita Walter and Betsy Allen and several and Roberta Kelly, lots of us were just asked into the studios to be backup vocals, just to studio gigs. And so we did a lot of them, and among them, we were asked by Michiel Kunze and Sylvester Levi to sing on this production that they were going to call the Silver Convention. The group didn't exist. It was just a studio production. And so we sang all of those tracks that you're familiar with, Fly, Robin, Fly, and Save Me, and Chains of Love, and all those great great songs. And in fact, on Fly Robin Fly, oh, and Sylvester Levi, who was the composer and arranger, he's actually Hungarian, and he brought those string arrangements, and he was actually the first guy to use strings in disco. You know, that doo, doo, doo type of falling strings. And then everybody started copying him. But this Silver Convention LP was the first time they were used in that way. And Sylvester was a brilliant musician. But when we were singing Fly, Robin, Fly, for instance, we didn't realize that there wasn't going to be a lead vocal on it. And so we thought we were just singing backup, and then we were kind of amazed to find out that we were it, having made something like $45 per song for the production.
That's a shame, because that track alone was staggeringly huge. Was it as big in Europe as it was in the U.S.?
Yes, it was. So to this day, I think Roberta Kelly is still angry with, if not trying to put forth a lawsuit, trying to get some of the money, which was rightfully ours. But, it's so long ago that I'm just saying, well, water over the bridge. It was fun. It was really
fun. I've heard some similar stories from other artists that have been on, the way the music business treated everyone as a almost like an hourly wage. You come in and sing, then we pay you, and you go away, and we don't want to hear from you when it's a big hit.
Yeah, there wasn't that attitude, but obviously that's what they did. So we were just happy to have the work, you know, and we got paid per title, and it was fun, great music. It was really fun to sing. We had a ball. But then what happened is they started asking for the group, and there was no group. They, in fact, on one of the album releases of Save Me, I think, I can't remember if it was the German or it was the German release, not the American. They had all this collection of people, colorful people on the back, and none of them had anything to do with Silver Convention. It was just for the album cover. But they, the song, particularly Fly, Robin, Fly, was such a big hit in discos here that they started asking for the group to appear. And there wasn't a group, and Geek and I, at the time, were very busy with a group called Love Generation. We were doing television appearances and on the road and everything, so we couldn't leave that to do Silver Convention. I don't even know if they wanted us, but they put together a group then with Linda Thompson and Penny McLean and Ramona Wolf to go out and be Silver Convention, and they were dancing around in slinky costumes and mouth and lip syncing to our voices. With great success.
Very interesting. Very interesting. We had a guest about a year ago who was an expert on Italo disco. His name is Alex the Ticket, if I'm pronouncing it correctly. And he told us some other groups. He mentioned Fun Fun in specific. They did the Color My Love track. That Fun Fun was actually a studio-owned name, but Fun Fun consisted of different people at different times. It sounds very similar to what you went through.
Yeah, I mean, the signature sound was more in the vocal arrangement and the musical arrangement than it was the individual voices. And in Silver Conventions, in that instance, when they went into the studio to record a second LP, then they used the gals that were actually on stage because they're all singing in their own right. So they sang Get Up and Boogie, and we sang the first LP.
I see. So you were part of the group that sang Save Me then off the first LP?
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Well, I'd like to take a moment. Glenn has graciously edited some of your tracks in Radio Link's segments, and I'd like to run that for the listeners, if that's okay, the Save Me track.
You're glad to hear that.
Me too. It's great. Bob, if you had run Save Me, you have it listed as Save Me by Silver Convention. Lucy, absolutely irresistible disco music. Absolutely irresistible. How could you not love a song like that?
And it was great. The whole LP was just really fun. And I think that, you know, Sylvester Levi had a lot to do with that because he was really classically trained. He was really stunning musician. So it was we had fun singing it. I didn't care that we only made $45 a song.
Yeah, and even today it brings such joy to people. The chat room completely recognized it and started talking about the year, etc. So
it's so danceable, you know. It's hard to keep still when you hear it.
And so from the heart.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. A real track, nothing phony about it. Glenn Rivera in the chat room, by the way, he's in our chat room, points out that the bassist played this live all the way through.
Yes, well, we were doing it on 24 track tape, which is about 3 inches wide, these enormous rolls of tape, you remember them, and studio boards that were, like 15 feet long, just a whole room, and they didn't have cut and paste like they do now. It wasn't computerized, so what they could do, and this is the only thing that they were capable of, is if you were singing and you didn't like the way that you sang, or any instrument, let's say, you don't like the way you did this one particular section or riff, or you were off on a note or whatever, you could say, you know, I just don't, you'd listen to it and you'd say, I just don't like the way I did that. So they said, okay, we'll drop you in. So they would play the song and you'd sing along with it, or play along if you were a musician. And then at the piece that you were trying to repair, they would just cut in and then cut out again. But it was within the whole tape. They had the ability to do that. But now, I went in the studio a couple of years ago, and I was just dumbfounded that they could just cut and paste. You could say, well, gee, I really like the way I nailed that chorus. And they'll say, okay, we'll use that one. And they just cut and paste and repeat it throughout the whole song. And those days, you literally sang or played from one end to the other.
It is pretty amazing, actually. It's almost like word processing. Anything you could do in a word processor, you could do with music these days. I DJed back in the 80s when it was vinyl and turntables, and we certainly didn't do any cutting and pasting back in those days. We have a caller for you, Lucy. We have VJC. This is Victor from Disco 935. In New York City. Victor, welcome to the show.
Hi, Peter. Hi, Lucy.
Hi, Victor. How are you?
Okay. I mean, obviously, I just wanted to chime in because the minute I heard Save Me, I mean, it blew my mind away. I mean, obviously, I run Disco 935. I'm a disco DJ from back in the day, and I run all this old disco from back in the day. The album itself is just pure, it's just timeless music. It's just, I'm hearing it now, and it just puts goosebumps. It gives me goosebumps just listening to the jams. Obviously, I didn't know that you, Always Another Girl, that you sang, that you put the talking part on that. One of my favorite songs, Always Another Girl. I mean, obviously, now I get who the vocalist was, and it's you. I never knew that. I'm reading your bio. It's amazing.
It's me, yeah. Did you hear me say earlier? Have you been listening the whole time? Did you hear me say about?
Yeah, I think maybe I must have missed maybe the first 5 minutes of the show.
Oh, okay, yeah, because I was saying that the Sylvester put those strings in. He was the first to use them in disco. It's so cool.
Right. The thing is, it's just like that music back in the day. I mean, it was just it lifted you. It just, I mean, if you didn't move to that, you were dead because. It's just great music. It's just amazing. At that time, also another group came out, Crown Heights Affair, the Tramps, Silver Convention, those type. You know, and when all that music came out at that time, it was just great, great music. It's just unfortunate. You just can't. You know, it's nice that we can bottle that and bring it back today, but it's just not like that. You know. Mm-hmm. You just got to deal with what we have today. And just,
there's no resurgence?
Yes. I hope it could be a resurgence. I don't know. But I wanted to just tell you was that great vocals on this LP. Plus, I was just reading on that the bio, Red Point Orchestra. Is that what it is, the orchestra, Red Point Orchestra?
That was another group I was in with Donna Summer.
Right.
And,
disco also?
No, it wasn't. That was.
Yeah, because I was trying to find out what was that, because, I mean, I'm trying to read up on it, because there is a group called Red Point Orchestra that I have, but it's a different version, and I was saying, maybe, did they sing on that? Yeah. I was... You know,
we had quite a few vocalists on Red Point in the beginning, and then I think they, and Sait Marvos, who was the leader of that group, he took it on beyond us, and I think he took it in an instrumental direction. But initially, Donna Summer, Mel Kennedy, and I, and Peter Bischoff were the vocalists of that group.
Okay, when was this recorded? Was it before the Silver Convention?
No, it was... maybe it was.
Because obviously when she came out with that LP herself, it had to be before 75 because she came out with, Love to Love You Baby.
Oh, Donna. Oh, yes.
Yeah, Donna.
Right. After Love to Love You, yeah, then she got big. It was before that, that's right. Mm-hmm.
Right, so it had to be in the early 70s, right? I guess.
Well, not too early. It was probably 73 or just shortly before that. It always happened in a very short period of time.
Right, mm-hmm. You know, it's just, I'm just dumbfounded because I really don't know what to say to you because it's one of my all-time favorite LPs, and I'm talking to one of the ladies that sang on this, and it's like, I'm 52, and I'm saying to myself, I was 19 at the time, and I'm mm-hmm. talking to Lucy Neal, one mm-hmm. of the vocalists from the LP. It's just amazing. I don't know why I'm speechless.
Oh, well, that's nice, Victor. We at the time, too, we were... when we were singing these things, we were kind of oblivious to what impact it was having in the States, at least until they started asking for gigs. We found out that it was big in discotheques and stuff. But in general, we were doing these things for what we thought was the German market. We were fairly unaware of how successful they were internationally. I'm only finding out now from Glenn Rivera how popular many of these projects that I was on were over here. I was surprised, in fact.
Yeah, well obviously back here, I'm from New York, I'm still in New York. When it was played here in New York back in 75, I mean, all the young kids, including me, it was just amazing. It was just amazing LP, and it still is. I mean, it's just timeless. So when I heard it back then, and even though it came from Germany, it was just great production work from bottom to end. And it's just unfortunate that it's just not like that anymore today in the music scene. Because, like you were saying, cut and paste and all that other stuff is just today is all with the computerized, and then just you know, it's all about the making a quick buck. But back in the day, I guess they were just making it from the heart, and it's just not like that anymore.
Yeah,
I guess I'm not too much into the politics of the music. I'm more into the music itself.
But you're still working as a DJ?
Yes, I am. I run Disco 93.5 on the internet. I've been running it for 10 years, and I do live shows, and I play stuff like Silver Convention, Tramps. I even go deeper into the crates, and back 70s, 80s, all that stuff. I continue to do this. That's
great.
How I met Glenn, and whatever. I know Glenn Rivera also. I mean, I never met him, but we've chatted on. Chatted on the phone and emailed back and forth the last several years, and he does restructuring.
Oh, yeah.
Which is. And,
it looks like he's brought a lot of people together.
Yeah, I mean, I'm telling him who's next. I think he says, I mean, he's an amazing talent himself. I know he's a DJ and he also does videos. So Glenn, great job. I'm waiting for the next one. But Lucy, seriously, I have to just say one thing before I leave. It's just a thrill and an honor to be talking to Lucy Neal, one of the vocalists of Silver Convention. Wow.
Well, thank you, Victor. You're very sweet.
Thank you, Victor. Thank
All
you
right,
for
have,
joining
have
us.
Have a good evening, and continue with the interview with Peter.
Okay. Nice
Bye.
Talk.
Have a good night.
You know, Victor is absolutely correct when he said at the beginning of his call, if that doesn't move you, you're dead. There was a particular feeling that went with some of these tracks, and you know, in the conversations we just had with Victor, we brought up Donna Summer and Love to Love You, and I'm wondering how this connection with Donna Summer happened, because I'm seeing it referenced with the production of Hair. Also, how did tell us about that, your relationship with Donna and how that all worked out.
Donna had been in Germany longer than I had. She arrived in the late 60s, I believe, and she was singing and she was doing, she was in the production of Hair before I joined it, and she was gone from that production by the time I came in. But she had also done the musical Godspell, in which she was very funny. I don't know if you know Donna, but she has a fantastic sense of humor. And she put on goofy hats and walked like a duck. And
How funny is that?
Yeah. So, but anyway, so she had been doing that in Germany even before I got there. And then, of course, there was just this music scene in Germany, and we were all singing, and she was singing in studios as well. And it was obvious to all of us, and to me also when we were on stage with Red Point Orchestra, that Donna was an amazing talent. And not only was she a talent, you'd stand on stage next to her and you knew that she was going to be a star. She just had that star quality and large elbows. but I
well
love Beth, and she's, and I still am in touch with her. And anyway, so she came in. Giorgio decided he wanted to do a solo LP with her. Actually, she had a recording before this Love to Love You album, but she did the Love to Love You Baby album with her, and some subsequent ones as well. And we all, same old gals, sang back up, the same ones that are on the Silver Convention. That was just the Munich theme. And it was interesting how Giorgio put that particularly Love to Love You Baby on tape. He just had kind of the basic chords, and there wasn't really any melody, but he had us all sing. There were four of us, with me and Gita and Betsy Allen and Roberta Kelly, and he would have all four of us sing one part. Love to love you, baby, baby. Love to love you, baby, baby. Love to love you, baby. Love to love. And then he'd have us all four sing the part, the third above that, and all four sing the third above that. So you have this big carpet of sound where all of us are singing all the voices. And then basically he just said, Donna, do something. You know, and she started there, I love to love you, baby. And then, you know, her groaning like and everything, and she just did it. And another interesting little tale is, not so little, actually, but he told the musicians to just play something. And he had this carpet of sound, and he had this little carpet of keyboards, Pete Bellotti, and he said, Dave King, the bass player, he said, can you play a riff? And Dave goes, do-do-do-do-do. He starts this riff.
Yes, yes, that classic riff, yeah.
Fantastic, you know, but Dave wrote that riff. That wasn't written for him. And so Dave also, at the, later on, said, hey, you know, I should get some royalties on this song, not just being played for the session, because I had very much a part in the whole creation of the song. He lost
indeed.
That battle as well. But anyway, that's how Giorgio was putting things together at the time, and the musicians were just kind of creating it as it went along.
Well, Lucy, I should give out our telephone numbers again. If you'd like to participate with Lucy Neal and myself, the toll-free line is 877-443-2366, 877-443-2366. If you have unlimited long distance, you could use that. It's area code 304-658-3333. 304-658-3333. They both ring in West Virginia. And Lucy, we have another caller on the line for you, and that is we have Jackie on the line. Jackie, welcome to Strictly Confidential.
Lucy?
Yes, Jackie?
Hi. Yeah, this is Jackie. I'm in
Hi.
Newport Beach with my friends Nancy, Becky, and Bee. anyway, we're wondering, great to hear you on the radio, and love listening to the interview and learning some things that we didn't know before, and we'd like to know what you're doing these days.
These days, I have a group, Moxie, with Dorothy.
Oh, you're not rusty. You were just singing on the radio, and you sounded great.
Thank you. You're with my Nancy, Becky, and Bee, right?
Exactly.
Yes, 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 yes. Nancy,
so we just
Peter,
like to hear what you're doing these days, and when can we
I have a
again?
Group of, I'm part of a group of five women, and we also sing oldies for the most part and some new songs, and we all play instruments, and I play guitar, not very well. Nancy plays a kick and electric guitar and a beautiful Taylor, and we sing lots of harmony, and we're having a great time, and we're playing for Nancy's wedding on the 30th.
Oh, well, I look forward to seeing you. I've heard a lot about you. I've heard your CD, and look forward to hearing more of you.
Are you going to be there on the 30th?
I believe so.
Okay. Good.
Well, thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
All right.
Thank you for joining us, Jack.
Say hello to everybody.
I will. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
What about Moxie? Where does Moxie perform, this group?
Moxie performs in my living room for the most part. And sometimes Nancy's living room. And we perform in backyard parties, friends of ours, you know, like three-day breast cancer walk and usually fundraisers or 50th birthday parties, things like that. And the only gig that we have ever done where we played for the public was last October, and in order to find a hall for us to play in, I actually joined the Moose Lodge. I am officially one of the women of the Moose. And I joined this Moose Lodge in San Diego, complete with paneling and tacky plaques on the walls and an enormous moose head over the stage.
My father was a moose. I too, have experienced the Moose Lodge. And you have summed it up perfectly.
Yeah, exactly. And when I first told my band members about that, we could use that. Since I'm a member, we can use this hall for free. We just have to guarantee that the bar will make something like $300 or something. And one of our members, Tracy, said, "Ooh, no, that's so tacky." And I said, "Well, just camp it up." And actually, it turned out to be just a ball. And I was able to invite my real estate friends and other friends and colleagues who hadn't normally, didn't have an opportunity to see us because we just play at private parties. And because we're five professional women, it's always been really hard to find a time when we can actually get together to rehearse. So we don't play often, we don't rehearse often, and sometimes a year goes by between gigs. But we have fun when we do play.
Well, I'm going to loop back just a little bit to something we talked about earlier, the Hornets, that you this was with the coconuts, the coconut bra, I think, or the coconut bathing suit top, and Anassis was sitting on the floor watching you, and some incredible names you dropped. I'm seeing now that we actually have is this the track Hawaii? Is that the one that you did that you were referring to in that when we're talking about that?
We have
the track called Hawaii in our staff.
There might be one or two versions of that on that, which you're looking at. Hold on, I'm going to grab this. It's Waikiki Tamare. Let's see. It's in one side's in German and one side is, yes, Hawaii would be the right one. Waikiki Tamare, it shows up again, but with an English lyric. I don't like it as well. So the one that's called Hawaii is the one I'm referring to that's partly in Hawaiian-sounding Bavarian.
Wonderful. Was this done on a cruise ship in front of those folks, or what was the scenario when you performed for them?
That song we did primarily in clubs and brought down the house with it, just smaller clubs. It was just lots of fun. But I don't know that we ever did that one on cruise ships. We're a little more staid on cruise ships.
Is this the one that you made the peanut butter sandwiches and handed them out?
No, that was I'm like peanut butter.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Part of the Hornets. I'd love for the listeners to hear the Hawaii track. We described the scene earlier in the show, and we have a copy of it loaded. And This is when Lucy Neal was with the Hornets, and the track is called Hawaii. If you'd roll that, Bob. I could certainly see how the multimillionaire old money folks loved it. It's absolutely priceless and unique. Absolutely unique.
It was really fun. Yeah.
Yeah. And what was the was that the sound of maybe a macaw screeching in the background? What was that extra sound that came in there several times?
It sounded like I don't know if it was made by us or something else. I don't even recall.
I see. What an amazing track. Tell us about Roseanne Cash.
Oh, well, Roseanne wanted to make an LP, and she was a little bit intimidated about making one in the States because of, you know, being under in the shadow of her famous dad. And she met a gal named Renata Dom, who was the promotion lady for Ariola Records in Germany. And Renata was in charge of taking care of all the American artists who came to Germany, and Herbie Hancock and people like that. And anyway, so she had met Roseanne while she was, I don't know what she was doing, maybe in the States with Emmylou Harris or somebody like that. And Roseanne said to her, I'd love to make an LP, but I'm a little bit afraid to. And Renata said, well, why don't you come and make it in Munich? We have great studios in Munich, and you could do it there and be not in the shadow of your dad, and, you know, it might be easier for you. So she talked her into coming to Munich to produce her first LP. And she introduced her to me right away, because here I was, an American gal in Munich, someone whom she could relate to. So we hung out together and in my living room and played guitars and stuff like that. And I played her a song that I had written back in 1972 called Thoughts from the Train. And she liked it. And so they put it on the LP, and it ended up being her single. However, she wasn't real happy with the production in general because of the guys who were producing this LP. And the arranger of the LP, who was Czechoslovakian and didn't really like country music. So she wasn't totally happy with the whole production, as it turned out. But that's how I met Roseanne. And then when I would come back to the States, I would see her. And I went up to L.A. to see her and Rodney and Emmylou up in Los Angeles, and stayed at her house in Calabasas and things like that. So she's really
amazing. Lucy, I'm going to interject. We have a caller on the line for you who's calling from the Netherlands, and so he's paying a lot of long distance tolls to speak with you. Right. We're going to bring Hans on from the Netherlands. Hans, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Good evening, Hans.
Good evening, Peter, and good evening, Lucy.
Hi, Hans. How are you? I get to hear your voice. Hans.
Well, we never talked, so this is a premiere, a first.
I didn't think you should stay up till 3 in the morning.
Well, I'm free the next day, so I can sleep out, and I think this was a one-of-a-lifetime opportunity to have you on the air for a couple of hours, 2 hours, I think it's lasting, this show.
Yeah.
1 hour and a half.
Yeah. Oh, great. Yeah, Hans, just so you know, Peter, Hans has been very instrumental. He's one of the fans who found me on the Internet, and he's been very instrumental in compiling lots and lots of information about my musical career, and between Hans and a guy in Sweden, Soren and Glenn, they know more about what I have sung on than I do, and they will say, well, what about that LP, and I don't even remember singing on it.
Remarkable.
And they'll prove it to me, and they'll show me a jacket cover, and anyway, how are you doing, Hans?
I'm doing fine. It's I'm hanging on to your lips. Listening to your story, of course, I know most of them. It's nice to hear them from your own experience. And I wanted to say I know Lucy Neal for about 5 years now, I think.
Yes,
something around. And we almost email weekly, and it's a great pleasure to know you. And it's a great honor, and it's very nice. And I'm very glad that I played a little part on that. That I put you together with Glenn and that you're now on the air.
Yes, thank you.
You played
a very big part, and one of these days I hope I can meet you in person.
Well, I'm sure that will happen. Don't know when, don't know why, but we will meet again. And it was very nice talking to you.
Thank you.
I'm going to listen to, and then in a while I'm going to bed because it's in the middle of the night here.
Yes, it is. What is it, 4 o'clock in the morning now?
Okay, we'll email, and we still keep in contact. And say hello to Glenn, yes?
Okay, thank you. Thanks for calling, Hans.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for calling, Hans.